today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
I'm gonna float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. George can't hit what his hands can't see.
There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
George to drive, hang, fire,
yes! He scores!
Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
And again, and Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this?
Welcome back! Back again, gentlemen! The Ninth Circle! Trey Lanthier, Alex Gallant here with you. Kyler Mead, that was a sharp cutoff, Trey. A little eager.
It was as installed
as I thought.
That was no fade out. That wasn't even a fade out.
That was
just abrupt.
That was abort. Cliff to black.
Man, hey, we're a little rusty.
Trey Lanthier, a little itchy on the trigger finger. Can't blame him. It's been so long, folks. 4 months, is that right? 3.5, 4 months.
A little longer than that.
It's been a while. We're coming out of retirement. Back into the game.
So good to be back. So good to be back. Back in the studio. Kyler Mead, Trey Lanthier, Alex Yan in the Ninth Circle. We're joined by a very special guest today, Mike Fiala. What's up, man?
How you doing, buddy?
Mike, Mike just started doing a new podcast for the new WCSN, Walter Cronkite Sports Network. Your first source for student-run ASU sports is a motto I just made up.
Wow, nice.
Spoken like a pro.
There you have it. There you have it. The BS meter is high on this show. Mike does a show with Jeff?
Oh, my co-host, Jeff Benson.
Jeff Benson, excuse me. We just met. Jeff Benson sounds like a fantastically terrific guy.
He's pretty average. No, I'm just kidding.
I hear that. So he's here joining us because football season has just begun. Mike Fiala is the football guy. He's bringing to you the fifth down regularly. Probably we're looking at weekly.
Yeah, probably weekly.
Weekly, Wednesday nights, Thursday mornings. You're going to be hearing him. And it's football time. This is where the Devils live in the Ninth Circle. And that means we're talking ASU football to a certain extent. We leave a lot of the more in-depth stuff to Mike and Jeff on the fifth down, but you know, we like to get into certain points of
Why not?
Every now and then we talk sports.
Why not? Yeah.
Every now and then.
Sometimes when we're not busy with Bobby Petrino, sunflower seeds,
right?
Facebook statuses.
Man, exactly. I wish we'd made a highlight reel of last year's stuff and just put it in one epic montage.
Oh, soon to come. Soon to come.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, welcome back to another year. Let's get right to it. Let's stop with the silliness, the small talk, and what we want to talk about here. Everyone's, hopefully, if you're listening to us, you paid some reasonable amount of attention to ASU's first game of the year last Thursday night, 1 week ago today, against the Northern Arizona University Lumberjacks. Decent game, guys.
ASU, not too shabby.
I understand, did reasonably well. Very slow. Very slow, says Todd Graham. This tempo, very, very slow. Mike Fiala, what was your opinion on that?
I think when you look at Arizona State, what they should be offensively, you want to kind of look at them like you would look at Oregon, right? The object is to go fast.
I tell you, that's what Sun Devils fans want to hear.
That's
man.
It. You know, I went to the game last year in Oregon, the ASU-Oregon game, and you could tell by the third quarter and the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth quarter, ASU was gassed.
Sure.
They were tired, you know? And that's when teams get other teams. That's when the offense dominates, right? And the Sun Devils are a perfect example. They have two quarterbacks and tons of skill position players that have speed. And we all know in the NFL, in college, in high school football, speed kills. You know, you want to get on the edge, and you want to beat people deep. Yeah. And that's what the Sun Devils can provide. And the faster, the better, especially with the Arizona Heat.
Yeah.
Like, teams come in, like in Illinois or Missouri last year, and they come in, and it's 90 or maybe it's 80.
What is everybody doing here? Is this people live here?
Exactly. That's what I said when I got here.
Exactly. You know, it's like,
this is a real place? There's a city here?
That's so true. When I got off the plane, first came here, I was like, who opened the oven? What is going on?
No,
it's hot.
So one of the things that we noticed, and definitely listen to the fifth down, you know, I know you break it down in a lot more detail, but one of the things that we kind of wanted to touch on was this two quarterback system that Coach Todd Graham kind of displayed for us, with mostly Taylor Kelly, who we were told was QB1, was the guy to go for, and he started the game certainly.
Right,
but it wasn't too long before they threw in Eubank, you know, getting him in there pretty quick. As soon as they got to the goal line, almost we got to see him take the field. Didn't do much. And I think that's the reason it's almost a question of who the quarterback is. I mean, everybody expected Michael Eubank to come in and be the starter, and then Taylor Kelly stole the job in like the final couple weeks of the preseason. So I I still question the decision because I still wonder what the whole deal was, but it's pretty clear that we have two quarterbacks of different capabilities.
Well, and let's talk about it. I mean, the decision seems, I mean, is questionable. I mean, Alex, you were on the field. Was there a fan reaction when Eubank came out? You were on the sideline. What was going on?
Well, there's a lot of buzz with Eubank coming out. I think people expected him to maybe show off his arm a little bit more. Just attempted one pass, which he completed for 2 yards. But in warmups, I was watching his warmups there with Kelly Eubank and Berkovici, who's probably going to be redshirting, Todd Graham says, this year. But Eubank has a strong arm. The question is, can he dial it in and hit his receivers on the run? I think that's the key. I don't know if Todd Graham wanted to keep that under wraps for the upcoming games against Illinois and Missouri here in the non-conference before they head into Pac-12 play. But he definitely has a strong arm. And then when you're looking at Taylor Kelly, not as strong of an arm as Eubank, but he's accurate. He fits the mold of a quarterback a little bit better than Eubank. Eubank's sort of that
passer,
Cam Newton style bruiser, little read option action
for
with
Eubank.
Yeah. 7 carries, 36 yards in the score last time. So that part was definitely in play. That's something Graham alluded to pregame, but the passing is definitely still a question mark.
So, Mike, you know, we don't want to waste your presence here. You know, we watch, we pay attention, but we definitely don't have necessarily that kind of, you know, in-depth, you know, maybe Alex, but the ability to really kind of break that stuff down. What do you think? What's the plan here? What's Todd Graham thinking? Well, what's the strategy?
All summer, Todd Graham, towards the end of camp, said, you know, that he's going to play two quarterbacks, which isn't unheard of in college football. But what's interesting about what Todd Graham's decision is, we all kind of maybe envisioned Michael Eubanks coming in and being the starter. As I don't know if you guys know, but Todd Graham at one point recruited Michael Eubanks to go to Pittsburgh.
Right.
He was kind of the guy that Todd Graham wanted to run his Panther offense. So you see Taylor Kelly, he comes in and he looks sharp and he looked good and surprisingly athletic with his ability to run. And yeah, you kind of throw a wrench in the mix. I mean, Todd Graham said he's going to have a 2/3 split to 1/3 Kelly to Eubank. But I envision that if Kelly struggles and Eubank, you know, wows the fans, because he has that kind of it factor, right? He has the ability to take off and run.
Yeah.
Similar to like what Cam Newton did at Auburn, right? Drag people, break tackles, and make just highlight reel kind of video game style plays.
Yeah.
So Kelly needs to be efficient to, in my opinion, to keep the job.
But you know what's interesting is that we saw some of that from Taylor Kelly. We saw him running. He was moving on the ground. And
he did.
Sure,
he picked granted, up a lot
it
of
was
yards
NAU.
In game,
But to see mobility out of this guy who everybody, I assumed at the very least, that he was just a pocket quarterback and we were going to see him passing from inside and not really moving around much. He got around. He gained ground. And I think that's something that's a huge asset to have. What?
Not keep going.
Is this the undercurrent already starting?
Yes, already started.
Between you
it's
and
already
Alex?
Started.
But you've broken down into it.
I'm sorry, Trey, were you saying something?
This is exactly what happens on pretty much every episode of the Ninth Circle. For those
go
of
on.
You
go
that haven't listened to
come enough, on, Trey, let's go.
You'll hear these conversations
well, this is
break out.
Again. He just doesn't pay any attention.
Anyway, I think Taylor Kelly showed both sides of his talent level. And to be honest, I think the starting job is his to lose if it ever becomes evident that Todd Graham isn't going with the two quarterback system.
By definition, it's his to lose.
Yes.
It was given to him. But and I kind of want to touch on your point, Mike. I mean, it seems like when you look at two quarterback systems that you can think of over the course of, you know, history, whatever, not that I'm some, you know, football history savant or anything, but just looking back, you know, I follow BYU football. My wife graduated from there. A lot of my family did as well. Last year, Riley Nelson, Jake Heaps was in there. He was the prototypical, you know, pocket passer guy, threw over the middle decently, couldn't throw outside of the hash marks to save his life.
He's a prized recruit, though, coming out of
well,
Skyline.
Exactly. And you think, okay, here is the, this is our quarterback, you know, it's our institution of football representing of quarterback, you know, and then you've got this guy, Riley Nelson, who's got the big long locks and just flies all over the place, just the strength in his entire body just to get everywhere. And not as good a quarterback, I don't think, as far as passing, but he's just got that ability to just move. And in college, you play these defenses that don't have a capability to monitor with both directions that the guys go. It seems like 90% of the time, these two quarterback systems end up going to, particularly in college, end up going to the quarterback that can run because it's just so much easier. Because if you don't have one guy that can win the job straight off because he's such a good passer, you're going to find somebody that can, well, hey, I can get the heck out of the pocket. I can get down the field.
Right.
What do you think about that? Do you think that this is you'd expect Michael Eubank taking over a few games if Taylor
Gooden's
not doing well?
I anticipate Eubank. I thought, I anticipated he would be the starter eventually because I didn't realize Kelly had all the tools that he does. But it's hard. The Devils like to throw it, and if Eubank doesn't throw it effectively or efficiently, they will remain the two quarterback system. I mean, there is value to Michael Eubank. Teams have to essentially go 11-on-11 if he's going to run, right? Somebody essentially might have to solo tackle him, which is unlikely with his size and speed.
Big guy.
Yeah. And then he's the perfect guy for the red zone. Very similar to what Florida did with Chris Leak and Tim Tebow, right? They used Chris Leak to get all the way down the field. And then when they were in the goal line, short yardage situations, change of pace, boom, here comes Tim Tebow. And breaking tackles, scoring touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to game plan for both of them. In the NFL, they say often if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. Mm-hmm. In college, that's only half true because you don't have the same amount of caliber of athlete.
Right.
And there's not enough preparation time in the week to prepare for both quarterbacks due to NCAA regulations and restrictions. So, I don't know. If Kelly plays well, I anticipate he'll remain viable as an option at quarterback. But I would think Eubank, that one-third share, he's going to chip into that week after week after week.
How good a game do you think Taylor Kelly has to have against Illinois on Saturday to keep that spot?
Well,
do you think it's up for Do you think that he's got it? Do you think he has it?
It's tough.
Do you think he's got a little more leeway than that?
I think he has some leeway. I mean, listen, he won the job outright in camp. So he outplayed Eubank and Berkovici in camp. So he looked – clearly the coaching staff thinks he's good. And he looked good against NAU.
Yeah.
But then again, it's NAU, right? So
exactly.
Who knows? If he doesn't turn the ball over – and he doesn't make mistakes, then I don't see any reason why he won't play at all.
You think he'll be in there? He'll at least halfway through the season, he's still throwing at least a little
bit. If he doesn't turn the ball over, yeah. I mean, Todd Graham came out this past week and said people that commit turnovers and silly penalties, they're going to get benched.
Yeah. Man, it's a breath of fresh air.
Right. I agree.
Definitely.
100%. But if Taylor Kelly goes in the tank and starts throwing picks like Stephen Threet did 2 years ago, I mean, it'll be a quarter.
Yeah.
If Michael Eubank steps in, plays well, I mean, there you go.
And I mean, if you look to the NFL, even that was what brought Kyle Orton down in the in the Denver against the Tim Tebow mania that was going on there. He threw a few picks. The guy wasn't throwing that badly, and then came back, had kind of a renaissance, almost led the Chiefs to playoffs over the Broncos, which would have been amazing. I like Tebow. I just also like stories like that.
I'm a Tebow guy myself.
Yeah, no, how can you not? Come on,
it's hard to dislike him.
You have to decide to just. It's the same with LeBron. You have to just be a person that just doesn't like people.
Oh,
here's somebody. All right, okay. That's a whole different story. Okay, so Illinois, kind of weaker side of the Big Ten. Then they're at Missouri, who is now an SEC team, whatever that means for these guys.
Yeah.
The defense is there to get into the SEC, and it's been Missouri. Missouri's Missouri. It's got to be a difference. Do you see that as being like a turning point game for the system? Or,
well, listen, if the Sun Devils come out here, and there's no guarantee they beat Illinois. I think they beat Illinois, but Illinois, they're great at putting pressure on the quarterback. So that's any quarterback's Achilles heel.
Sure.
But assuming they beat Illinois, Missouri has this week they have Georgia, which is tough. Right,
and then first SEC game.
Right, then they have another SEC game after ASU. So their ASU is kind of like the trap game, right? And the Devils could come in there and get them.
That's exactly what happened last year.
Well, no, this is the thing. Both of these games, Illinois and Missouri, are going to be vengeance matches. ASU wants to avenge their loss last year at Illinois. That was a really crushing loss. It started off the season so hot.
That was devastating.
And it was. It really was, because they had a chance to win it the entire way through.
Numerous chances to put points on the board.
Erickson's lack of game management really cost them the game.
Oh, but what was the reason why they didn't win? It was really, Brock Osweiler was getting crushed.
Yeah.
Crushed the entire game. He was constantly under siege. It doesn't help the fact that he didn't make good decisions, but it's really, really hard to kill a quarterback from making bad decisions when he doesn't have any time.
Sure.
Because, I mean, it's tough. I mean, nobody likes getting hit by guys that are 250, 260 pounds repeatedly.
Definitely. and then when you look at the Missouri game, I mean, that was one of the great games in college football last year, and we were at it. It was an exciting match, and it went back and forth. And finally, after relinquishing a huge lead, ASU ended up winning it in overtime. So you think Mizzou has to be feeling like they want to avenge that loss at home. So there's a lot of emotions and tensions that are going to be riding on the line.
Yeah, no, Missouri definitely is going to come out with a vengeance.
Yeah, of course.
They had chances to win that game at the end. They had that field goal.
Pinkel had a million chances. Didn't their coach ice their own kicker?
Yeah. He totally mismanaged the final few minutes of that game, Gary Pinkel did. But Missouri is a talented team. They might not have SEC-caliber talent this first year, but they kept their in-state number one wide receiver recruit, Dorial Green-Beckham, and James Franklin, dual threat, sort of a Michael Eubank,
and
an advanced Michael Eubank. He tore him up last year. And this year, this is going to be, obviously, as Mike said, after the Georgia game, might be a little bit of a letdown, but James Franklin is the real deal, I think. And it's going to be tough for ASU to stop him, especially if that secondary is as suspect as some people might think it is for ASU.
I'm happy you said that. I don't mind if I jump
in. No, please. Yeah.
No, it's funny. Last year, the Sun Devils, right, they played a lot of zone coverage, and they got beat a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have, I don't know whether it's prep time, discipline, I don't know what happened, but they got beat deep a lot. And they got beat pretty much
all
everywhere.
All of the above.
Right, they got beat like a drum. This year, Todd Graham has gone to a more man-like concept.
Yeah.
So, you know, James Franklin, they threw it around last year. But, you know, this year it's going to be a lot harder to throw it around. You have guys in your receiver's face as opposed to floating off 6-7 yards. But I agree.
Yeah.
Listen, James Franklin's a good player. There's no doubt about it. But I don't know. I mean, it is going to be tough, I think, for Missouri to beat ASU in between Georgia and another SEC team.
Man, I'm just looking up how many times – holy crow. I'm looking up how many times Brock Osweiler was sacked in last year's Illinois game. I think I'm up to 5. 6?
Yeah, he got crushed.
This is, like, unreal.
That's not even counting.
I couldn't find, like, a good stat line, so I just looked up the play-by-play on ESPN, and I did Control-F for sack.
Right.
Sack.
That's not even counting.
Oh, here's one on the Illinois guy. Oh, then Brock.
Right, exactly. That's not even counting quarterback hurries, which are some ways more devastating than a sack.
Oh, absolutely.
Because that's how bad decisions happen.
Yeah, no, exactly. Okay, a couple of last things, and we're going to move off this topic. But first of all, what do you think best case scenario with this two quarterback? Reasonable, but best case scenario with the two quarterback system.
What do you mean in terms of ASU's record?
In terms of where this goes. Do we eventually just see one take over? Do we think that this is something that we hope would keep going for the whole year?
I think you're going to see one take over.
Who do you think it'll be?
I do. I would bet on Eubank.
And you said that, I guess. Yeah,
because I think he's got the wow factor, and he has ability that. Taylor Kelly's a good player, don't get me wrong. And he could be a quarterback for a lot of teams in college football. And be a good quarterback if he plays the way he played like against NAU.
Yeah,
no kidding. But who knows, right? But Eubank is he's a special athlete. He's a special player. He's special athletic ability. So it's hard to deny that. You know, a lot of times the cream rises to the top, right? So
yeah,
it's tough.
Well, good. Well, Mike Fayah, so glad to have you with us. We're going to take a real quick break. That means we stick around, podcast, we hang out. That just means we chill, take a little beverage maybe, little break. Maybe Trey runs to the bathroom possibly, I don't know. Just
definitely.
That's a definite. What's going on?
That's a guarantee.
Guaranteed.
So when you're listening to this music coming up, Trey's going to the bathroom.
That means we hang out, you enjoy the music. So glad to have Mike Fayah with him. Make sure to take out the fifth down. It'll be on CronkiteSports.com. You have been in the ninth circle. welcome back. Man, that's some good stuff. Good stuff, Trey. Don't it feel good, Trey?
It feels very good.
Man, it's good to be back in the studio, Trey. Alex Gallant, Trey Lanthier, Kyler Mead, still with you on the Ninth Circle. Thanks for sticking around. Hope you enjoyed the music. I know we did. Let me let you in on a little secret, actually. I'm never going to repeat this, but this is a little secret. Alex says no secret. All right, it's going to stay a secret. Stay tuned to the end of this season of the Ninth Circle, and maybe we'll reveal the secret that I've decided not to reveal. But instead, right now, what we are going to talk about, we've got some NBA action, as the media relations department has been liking to refer to it as, new basketball assistants. That's straight from media relations. I am a Sun Devils hack. There you go. I'm doing it. I'm saying your line. It's just for you, Sun Devils Nation. it's all over, like, the media. You guys haven't been seeing this. It's on the SunDevils.com. It's all the emails from the SIDs. No,
we don't, we're
that's
not
like
on.
That's like
no, excuse me.
We don't get these emails.
You don't get the emails.
No. We're not.
Maybe when you have your own show.
Do you know Doug Tamaro?
Doug Tamaro, by the way, SID for just about everything. If you want to get anything done to the media,
he's your guy.
Sun Devils. Doug Tamaro's your guy. Such a good guy.
Set us up with that Steve Patterson interview
last
year.
He did. Well, he was somewhat involved.
Rocky.
That was our guy.
We should get
Patterson.
Back in touch with Rocky.
Doug Tamaro, by the way, little teaser for later in the season. We are going to be having, as we amp up for basketball season, we are going to be having some basketball players on. We've been promised none other than the very true I forgot his last name.
Carson!
I was going to say Parker, but I knew that was wrong. That's how excited I am for Sun Devil football, everybody. I'm forgetting all the Sun Devil basketball players' names.
Understandable.
So, but we
just don't mess it up when he comes into the studio.
I promise I won't. So we're hoping to have Coach Sendek on. But that's kind of down the line. It's a little bit of stuff that's up in the air. But we have been promised, as long as things don't fall through, some hoopers, as Doug Tamaro likes to say. Speaking of, however, let's kind of talk about these NBA's new basketball assistants. Eric Musselman, Larry Greer. When I was in Warriorville, up in central-ish Northern California, really, Eric Musselman was an NBA coach. Do you guys remember those days? Eric Musselman coached NBA teams, Warriors,
yes.
Kings.
Yeah,
that's something.
Not very good, but
now,
he was there.
And now he's a Sun Devils assistant.
How about
coach?
That?
I mean, how
it's crazy.
What
it's,
does this mean? Let's and we got some stuff like sports wise, but like, what do you think this means? And this guy was D League Coach of the Year last year. Like, he hasn't done poorly for himself since leaving the NBA big boys.
Went 38-12 last year. Now, how awesome is this D League name? The Los Angeles Defenders, D-Fenders. How awesome is that?
That's amazing. That's what they should call the
let's
NFL.
Let's also remember that he guided Venezuela to a silver medal in the 2012 FIBA Men's South American Championship.
The very prestigious FIBA Men's South
American Championship. Being able to coach other countries
against
is pretty impressive.
Of...
and you bring in a Venezuelan star, maybe he's going to be our pipeline to Venezuela. Maybe we're going
to
see some Venezuelan superstars.
We have a pipeline
coming
to
out.
Eastern Europe coming out.
Yes. Yes, it's going to be like the guy from St. Mary's bringing in all the Aussies.
Randy Bennett.
There you go.
Man, that's good knowledge.
I knew he was going to know it.
That's some faith to know. So let's, however, we're all over the place.
What is even going on here?
What is going on?
Randy Bennett's somehow came into this conversation. I don't even know how that worked. But
so how big a get is this? I mean, looking at Sun Devil basketball, as Sun Devil basketball fans, analysts, reporters that we consider ourselves, how big a get is this? What kind of an effect are we expecting here? Is this significant? Should we be excited?
I think on the recruiting end, it's going to be significant. You're going to be able to bring in superstars that are trying to get to the NBA level, and they're going to see that the coaching staff we have here has an NBA head coach formerly, an NBA assistant coach, and then Herb Sendek, who's not regarded as a huge name, but he does know some big names. I mean, Jeff Van Gundy is his mentor, and he's been around. He knows a lot of people.
Do you think he drops that line when he's sitting in kids' living rooms? He's out in Chandler.
Hey,
he goes,
this is Jeff Van Gundy on the phone. hey, how you doing, Jeff? Yeah.
I'm talking with the kid right now.
I can't talk.
Do you know Jeff Van Gundy?
I can't talk.
And the kid goes, who?
No, I think that's definitely something that you have to value as a recruit. When you're making that appeal to a kid in high school who has aspirations and dreams of going pro and making money doing this,
right?
He wants to improve his skills the best way he can. And if he's playing for coaches that have done it before and have seen the best of the best and the worst of the worst,
he certainly saw the worst
of the worst.
I think you're going to definitely have a chance for a lot of recruits to build up that interest. And I think that's why it's a big deal to bring these guys on. I mean, have you ever heard of a press conference for an assistant coach hiring? I mean, maybe for a football team,
right now.
A basketball team that finished, I don't even know, last year, a terrible record.
Oh, man, I've put it out of my mind.
Yeah.
It was bad, though.
It was bad.
It was 10th in front of 12. USC and Utah.
Utah.
Ooh, Utah, man. Wow. They are bad.
Better than Utah.
Yeah.
Always got that. And USC, which is nice for this part. We always want to go one up on Southern California. I'm from Northern California. We always want to go one up on Southern California, too. What is it with Southern California?
I don't know. I mean, I'm from there, I guess. That's it. I think people just
suck.
Yeah.
Explains it all. So, I mean, but really, I mean, do you really think, like, these kids, you know, they go out to Chandler and Scottsdale and Trey, tell me you're about to sneeze.
I'm not.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm, like, waiting on a
Trey just makes this face and waiting on a perm.
Oh, that's good. Even better. So, even better.
But you go out to, you know, you go out to Chandler, Scottsdale, you know, Mesa, you know, maybe to some of these California schools. You
yeah,
go
hopefully
up to,
out of state yeah, because they need to start branching out
exactly.
A bit.
So, you know, you go to these California schools and maybe because Musselman coached in California, but he doesn't exactly yeah. have. I mean, if any of these, I mean, high school kids we're talking about remember when he coached in California. Do you really think it's going to make that big
that's,
a difference to have this failed
the,
NBA
that's
coach
the point,
in there?
That's not the point. Even as a failed NBA coach,
yes.
He's an NBA coach. He's the guy that made it there. How many coaching staffs have two former NBA coaches on their staff? Yeah. How many?
NBA. If the recruits are not going to look up Musselman's
exactly.
coaching record with
sure,
the Warriors
maybe
and Kings.
It's long enough that these
but if
kids
they hear,
won't remember him.
They're
going to
hear
NBA
and
yeah.
they're going to be intrigued automatically because
that's
he's been there.
Go.
He has connections
he's
in there.
The key.
And the recruits, obviously, the main goal is the NBA. Mm-hmm. And having someone on the staff that can get them there is obviously enticing.
Yeah, and he can make the calls and say, listen, this guy didn't have a great combine, but he's okay. He's this, he's this. And he has those connections in the pro league where he can get this kid to work out with pro players if needed and stuff like that. All that comes in the package of having NBA experience, whether – and sometimes it's an NBA player, but in this case, you've got an NBA coach coming down to coach for ASU. I think it's invaluable in the recruiting aspect. To be honest –
they're big names.
Big names are big. Big
Get
names
some
are
hype,
important.
Yeah.
Big names are really.
I mean, for ASU basketball, they're big names. Yeah.
Even for any basket, for not any basketball program, but very few basketball programs would turn down this type of assistant coach in reality.
Yeah.
And this is the effect that Steve Patterson's have had.
No, and all
point.
The quotes
yeah, that's
say,
a good point.
Alex, you were just looking something up about that, weren't you?
About Steve Patterson?
Yeah, yeah. Or was that your Trey? You're looking at all these quotes about.
Looking up a few quotes from the press
oh,
conference.
Yeah,
in
you
which
were mentioning.
Steve Patterson was one, talking yeah. about his idea with the whole thing. But then Herb Sendek came out and talked about how instrumental Steve Patterson
yep.
was
yeah,
in bringing these guys in. He called up these NBA coaches and he said, well, we've got Steve Patterson on the staff. And of course, they already knew that. But to hear
well,
about
Patterson
it again.
Patterson was a trailblazer, administrator, GM, something like that, just
yep.
recently.
Yes,
VP.
And
that's where Larry Greer
came from. He was a big name. People knew who he was. People know he's easy to get along with. And that's networking. That's exactly what that is. And Steve Patterson clearly had a presence known and made where coaches, when they were called up and he was brought up as their potential employer, they were on board. They said they had a whole stack of people that wanted to apply for this job. NBA people. They had to weed out NBA guys for this job. Think
so,
about that.
So in the end, was it better?
I would love to know who the other guys were.
I would too.
Yeah, they're not
when
gonna
Eric Musselman. Like, I'm stoked.
Yeah,
no, I think it's great. It's just you know, NBA guys. Wow, fantastic. That's amazing. But still, it is who it is. And I'll be honest. And that's a great point. And I kind of want to get back to that, Trey, a little bit about the impact that Steve Patterson has, just his impact since he took over just 5 months, 6 months ago, very recently, how much he's done in just that short period of time. But kind of before we get to that, we've talked about recruiting, about the effect there. I do feel like I don't know about the recruiting. Like, I think that stands to be seen. ASU has a hard time enough recruiting as it is. It needs all the help it can get, so it can't hurt. But I think when you look at particularly Musselman, who was D-League Coach of the Year, he's working with kids that are developing, that are not at that necessarily NBA level, but that are developing their skills. I think, and people have been saying, like, you know, what, I don't know what difference it's going to make on the court. You guys have been saying that. And I feel like on the court that could make a significant. This is a guy that knows how to train people who want to get better and
definitely
aren't that great.
Yeah, just looking at his roster, the Lakers.
And
it was a Lakers
nothing
affiliate.
But wants to get better and not that great.
I mean, they Musselman had guys like Andrew Goldlock, Kareem Rush, Derek Character, Krishna Iyengar.
Great name.
I mean, these are guys that ASU could potentially get. Goldlock went to College of Charleston. Character went to UTEP. Iyengar was a foreign player, but they're obviously looking at that again.
ASU is a step up from all of those schools.
It is a step up, and by having him on the staff, that's enticing because he obviously coached these guys well enough to lead them to the D-League title. What's saying he can't do the same at Arizona State?
And what if you make the pitch to these recruits? Listen, we'll be your D-League. You show up, we'll develop you and make you ready for the pro game. The only problem I have with that is I don't want to see the team aspect cut down. But if you want to get superstars, you have to appeal to the individual.
I think that the successful you're exactly right. But I think that the successful model of the last since the one and done era, basically, you know, but the successful model has been get one or two one and doneers, two and doneers, you know, stars, NBA players, and then build a team around them. That's been the Krzyzewski, you know, adaptation. That's been the Kentucky model. That's been
I would go more Kentucky, North Carolina than Duke.
Yeah. Obviously, but Duke has figured it out. And I think Duke is, and I'm, let's pump the brakes real
yeah,
quick.
We're not comparing.
I'm not saying ASU is going to be anything like Duke, but we're talking about being successful in the Pac-12, which anybody can be successful in the Pac-12.
And so these are the goals
that we set. That's how college sports works. You set goals for that are attainable, and you try to reach them. And that's so being successful in the Pac-12. You follow the same model. You get a few guys that are one and doneers, two and doneers, NBA quality. Guys, there's nobody on this team except hopefully Jahi Carson that's going to the NBA. I mean, come on. Trent Lockett we didn't really think was going to the NBA, and he left.
Well,
you know?
It says something when your best player hasn't stepped on the court yet.
Yeah, has never played. That's great. You know, I mean, it's rough for the rest of the team, but it's...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's great. I'd rather have something else coming in here, but...
But
yeah.
for a new situation...
Don't get me wrong. It would be terrible if we didn't have Jahi Carson right now, because what would we be looking... Jordan Wojcicki! Yeah. You know, there would be nothing to talk about.
Kentucky. None of Kentucky's best players coming into this year have stepped on a court. None of North Carolina's best players this year have stepped on the court
yet. Are we
How many do they have? How many do they have, though?
Jahi Carson is no.
More than Jahi Carson.
But Jahi Carson would not start on either of these teams. He would not even be 6th, 7th. Maybe he'd be far on the bench on these teams.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't think... It's good. The kid's pretty...
I think he's talented.
Legit.
I don't think he's that talented. I think the problem that ASU has had with recruiting, and you mentioned this, Kyler, is the biggest deal they have is that they can't get in-state recruits because they're all heading to Arizona, U of A.
Well, they are getting in-state recruits, but they are not... It's past the cream of the crop.
Yeah,
it's,
exactly. They're getting in-state recruits.
They're getting the leftovers.
Well, because, you know, every state has its own competitive nature for in-state recruits because that's you have to appeal to the whole you want to be at home, you want to be close to family, stuff like that. And ASU needs something to give them an edge over U of A. For the past, I would say, maybe forever, U of A has had an edge over ASU in recruiting. Usually in football too, but almost always in basketball.
See, I disagree. I wouldn't put this as a battle between ASU and U of A in terms of recruiting. Arizona's going to get the recruits no matter what. They've had a prestigious program for like 30-plus years, and they have the number one ranked recruiting class coming into this year. Sean Miller does, and those are all out-of-state recruits.
So attractive.
They're all out-of-state recruits. So I think ASU needs to ignore what U of A is doing. They're going to get their players, focus on getting some higher-caliber players aside from three local products like Kalen Robinson, Kenny Martin,
some Russian
Jacobson,
guys.
That Russian guy that's coming next year. Yeah. Those are... From, by all accounts, just average players. They need to go for some home runs, as Herb Sendek put it, and go to California.
Yeah.
Go east.
And so let's switch gears just a little bit, kind of on the same point, but kind of moving in a little bit of a different direction, kind of to the point that you were making about the effect that, and I think we can accredit this almost exclusively to Steve Patterson. Let's say, best case scenario, this gives them a big edge. Where does this rank? In all the things that Steve Patterson has done to this point, he's been here 5-6 months. Already we've got new stadiums for both sports in progress. We've got new assistant
both
coaches.
Sports referring to
football and basketball.
And baseball.
Well, baseball's been in progress.
True.
Baseball has been in progress. New head coach for football in Todd Graham. I mean, What are the other big things that were? I mean, those are like probably the three really big ones.
Well, wasn't he in control of the Dennis Erickson firing, which is sort of an independent event from the hiring of Todd Graham?
Yeah.
He's done a lot. He's made a huge splash since he showed up here. We got a great chance to talk to him last year. We talked about his expectations and how he feels. He's so excited, so into it. He loves what he's doing here. How can you complain about this guy? Name one thing he's done that's been like, eh.
I just love that he's done. I love that he's been so clearly active and making changes.
He's aggressive. He's not just sitting back.
Especially because that's what Lisa Love
significant
was.
Changes.
She was a conservative. Oh, just sign extensions. Dennis Erickson, more money.
Yeah.
Herb said that,
I believe
more
in
money.
Dennis Erickson.
Here you go. I'm just gonna sit back and just watch this.
That's a good impression.
As far as I'm concerned, Dennis Erickson
and I think
is our
the,
coach.
That's the wrong way to go about it. It's the wrong way to be an athletic director. You want to make yourself known. You want.
Can we make a soundbite of that? See, here we go. Trey's trying to talk again, and me and Kyle are joking.
I'm trying my hardest. I got to push through.
Keep going. Push.
You got to be out there. You have to try to make these hires. You have to try to pull in these assistant coaches that can help your recruiting aspect. And this is the thing, Kyler, that we were talking about a little before the show. Is Herb Sendek is not exactly the highest regarded coach in the Pac-12.
Not exactly.
No.
Not in the upper tiers. And you're bringing on two NBA guys that have been in the NBA as your assistant coaches below this guy. Is there any chance that they're going to be pressuring Herb Sendek for his job? Considering, what has he really done since he's gotten here?
I think it's reasonable.
We discussed this last year in our first episode, I think, about Herb Sendek's resume.
We talked about last year. We talked about last year how with Trent Lockett leaving, I think maybe that buys him another year. I think last year he was bought another year with the Lockett injuries and the
and the extension,
the contract extension.
Well, obviously he
You're
was
gonna
literally
sign him and fire
another,
him.
He was literally bought more years because of the extension. But I mean, another like grace period year you know, the guy's getting suspended and the guy's getting injured, and now Trent Lockett left. I think that maybe that buys him another grace period years. Yeah, he's got another 2 years, 3 years on his contract. Obviously, you know, we're not talking about. I don't think ASU basketball is so important that we're just going to eat a guy's salary for 2 years, 3 years. But is this the long view? And I think it's a good point because that's a Patterson-esque move, you know? Is this the long view? You know, Patterson's saying, listen, we're going to tear down that freaking stadium. We're going to play in Glendale if we have to. We're playing, I don't know, high schools if we have to. We're going to play somewhere.
We're tearing down
that piece of garbage stadium so that we can have a real good stadium. Sure, it'll take 4 years. Sure, it'll take 5 years. But you got to. He's a businessman. Take the long view. And that's what successful sports programs everywhere
do.
And
that's another thing Texas did.
That's
so lovable about Steve Patterson.
The Lost Odds.
Yeah.
Is the fact that he's setting up for his long stay here. He wants to be here. He wants to stay here. He's not, and this is the problem a lot of people have with Todd Graham, and it completely kind of a relevant topic, but was it he was using ASU as a stepping stone, or almost as it feels like.
I hope he's using ASU as a stepping stone.
No,
if he can elevate ASU to the point where he is suddenly so attractive that he can get to the next level, go! By all means! That would be amazing because that means Rose Bowl success.
Yes.
You have to be going to the Rose Bowl for him to get to the next
level. He's not going to the next level, 4-8
exactly,
or 5-7.
Exactly.
But keep going. You know, what we're saying about Patterson and all is he's here to stay. He's setting up camp.
He told us as much.
He's saying, listen.
Ninth Circle exclusive.
I want to stay here. I want to hang out here. I want to set this program up so I can grow old running this thing. And, I mean, obviously he's already old, but grow older, I guess you could say.
Whoa.
Oh, he's a young man.
Man.
50s?
That's a low blow.
He's 50s.
Well, he's older than me. He's older than you. He's older than everybody on this program.
Is that the standard for age?
Maybe. Isn't that what older means?
Is he older than 18?
It's a comparison to what you're at. If I am 18 right now, I say you're older, then you're older because I'm 18.
No, older. Right. Older.
Well,
you said old.
No, he's an old man already.
He's already old.
No, I said he wants to grow old and I said grow older. Okay.
Uh-oh, now he's never going to come on our show again. Trey caught him old.
Wow.
But I hope you're right. Honestly, I hope Herb Sendek's feeling the pressure because worst case scenario, it makes him coach better or make changes.
Unless he can't coach under pressure.
Well, and if he can't, then there's something in place. You know, I mean, clearly, If Eric Musselman and Larry Greer, clearly, if they're prepared to take this job, they it's not like they're like jumping to another NBA job somewhere, you know. Yeah. So clearly they're in a position where, you know, listen, if last year the contract he gets let go of, if at least there's something in place so that if he hasn't improved in these 2-3 years, there's somewhere to go. That sounds like something Steve Patterson would do, and I hope it is, because otherwise, because if he's good enough to coach over these guys, by all means. But if he's doing what he's been doing, obviously he's not.
So would Eric Musselman be considered? It's over Larry Greer. Is the if we were to say hypothetically,
well,
if either of these guys
the
are
yeah. He's the bigger name.
Technically, okay. He's ahead of Larry Greer, but I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm actually more excited for this Larry Greer hire than Eric Musselman.
Tell me why.
I'm reading this article in OregonLife.com. I've been checking it out the past couple days. He's known around the NBA as, quote,
to read that article.
The spy who everyone knows. So he wasn't on the bench with Nate McMillan, and then once he was fired with Caleb Canellis, but he was behind the bench. You know, one of those guys with the clipboards you always see.
Yeah.
They gave an example of Marcus Camby heard a play that Rick Carlisle was calling out last year in a Mavericks game, and he yelled the play to Larry Greer, who yelled a counter defensive.
Wow.
Zone. They went into a 2-3 zone once he yelled out that play. So I don't know if this will impact recruiting as much as it will on the court execution, which is something that ASU needs as well.
No, definitely. Yeah. And it's good if both of these guys can contribute in different aspects of the game. It would be awesome. It would be great. And something else about Larry Greer, in case you didn't know, he is on Cloud 9.
That's true.
Which apparently means joyous and happy.
He's on Cloud 9. We're in the ninth circle. Did it. There you have it.
That's the first segue.
He's on Cloud 9. We're in the ninth circle. I hope Herb Sendek's feeling some pressure. We would love to hear from our listeners. We're accessible on Twitter at a Twitter handle that is about to probably be changed. But check us out on CronkiteSports.com.
Find us at Cronkite Sports.
Tweet us there. We'll get back to you. We'll get you the new Twitter handle.
Facebook.com/CronkiteSports.
There it is. So, you know, kind of get at us about this. What are your feelings on this? What are your feelings on the two quarterback system? We would love to respond to your thoughts. We'll even read your Twitter handle on the air, get you a few more followers so you can chase the great Alex Gallen.
That's right.
The Sammamish Miracle.
And wow. Don't forget, in the next segment, we're going to have our
very important topic
coming up, so you really want to stick around for that.
That's the only thing a lot of people listen
yeah,
to. So
it's
if you're one of those people, you've made it a long flipping way for that segment. We're gonna listen to a little bit more music. We're trying to get a little more musical this year, y'all, so enjoy. We're gonna take a quick break. We will be right back. You are in the ninth circle. Welcome back into the Ninth Circle. Kyler Mee joined by Trey Lanthier, Alex Gallant for our third and final segment. This is the last segment. Hope you enjoy the music. Hope you've enjoyed the very heavy ASU sports talk. It's nice in fall. There's so much to talk about. We struggled a little bit last semester. Not to say that baseball and softball aren't amazing sports, but there's just a little less to talk about. I mean, you have to really, really make it a big deal if you're gonna really delve into them, you know. And we did some softball talk, we did some baseball talk, and I thought it was really good. But it's nice to have basketball and football.
Definitely,
I tell you what,
definitely
good to have the big two back in business. So, last segment of the show. Our faithful listeners know what that means. But Alex Gallant, just in case we got somebody new listening or people that, you know, just aren't so faithful that they don't know how it works, why don't you tell them what's waiting for you at the beginning of the last segment of the show?
The very important topic.
Oh, yeah. We got to get some echo and reverb on that. Whoa, the very. That'll be good. Like they're like saying it into like the Cowboy Stadium or something like that. That'll be good.
So we're gonna work on that. What is our very important topic this week, Kyler?
So the very important topic, you know, we're big on social media because we are journalists, or journalists, as one of our professors would say.
Shout out, Michael Bloom. Shout out,
Michael Bloom, best ethics and diversity professor.
I have no idea what's going on, but that's all right.
So because we are journalists, it's very important they're turning the lights off. We got to finish up.
We're not sitting in the dark.
We know that social media is a big deal. It's a big wave of the future, wave of the present.
Certainly. Wave
and
of
we've
the present,
done, we've
yes.
done a lot of EITs, very important topics, on social media in the past, how to get good Twitter followers, what's a good policy for follow back, you know, stuff like that. But
so
this is one that I can't believe we haven't talked about because it is arguably the cardinalist of sins, in my opinion. I don't know how you guys feel.
I think some things just shouldn't be allowed to happen.
It shouldn't be possible. Like,
exactly.
Facebook should just not
Are you
no,
saying this is the cardinalist
it.
Of sins out of all VITs or just
no,
social
no, no, no.
media?
Just, should
all
this social
be out
media
of the seven
sins?
Deadly sins?
Out of all social media
the
sins.
Eighth deadly sin?
So this is the first out
this
of
the
ten
first,
social
the
media
first
commandments.
Deadly sin of social media. Do not.
Thou
under
shalt.
Any circumstances, even ironic, because I don't know. I can't necessarily tell that you're doing it ironically.
You don't have telepathic powers?
Exactly. They're not always. It's, you know, they're intermittent.
Okay.
Intermittent.
Okay.
It depends on how close I am to
gotcha.
The sacred stones.
Gotcha.
Thou shalt not like thine own status.
There you go.
Shall not. Thou shalt not.
You know what it would be like? It would be like if people could retweet themselves on Twitter.
It would be exactly
yes.
like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what
RT,
it would be like.
RT at
I'm going to post something on Twitter.
Man, that was good. Let me say this again.
So it just shows up twice. It's the same thing, just with an RT
Except
in front
you
of it.
You have to delete How many? You have 142
characters.
You can delete two characters because you have to put the
RT.
Yeah,
just delete like a period or a comma or something like that. That's what I always do.
But the thing is, liking your own Facebook status is like patting yourself on the back for saying something. For me, you know, saying something in a conversation. Hey, Kyler. Yeah, good job, Trey. Good job. You did a good job.
And I'll be honest.
You talk.
There are
you
times,
socialized.
There are times in my life, and I pride myself on posting what I feel to be humorous or interesting
Certainly,
Facebook
Certainly, yes. We have read your paragraphs.
Yeah. No, and I put a lot of thought into some of my Facebook status as well. You're
cold.
We'll discuss this.
You better watch out after the show.
I'm going to poke you into oblivion.
I'm going to punch you in the mouth, as Bobby V would say.
And I've written stuff that I just think, man, if everybody had my sense of humor, I would be a lot funnier.
Yeah?
Is that not the case with everybody on the planet?
You caught on, Trey. You got the joke. But it's just, there are things that you say and you think, man, that is a good thing.
But you don't need to like
it. But you don't like it. We know you like it.
Makes me
wanna... You said it.
You're not going to put something on there that you're going to dislike or...
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to post it, it's something you want other people to know. It's not something you're going to post and then want yourself to know because you already know it. You don't need to like it because you've already read it over. You've already typed it out yourself. Why like
well,
it? It
and
makes
the,
me want to throw
The interesting
up.
Thing is that the people – I mean, who – I would say there's only like 2% of the population.
Oh, less. I would say less.
Off. But
no,
the,
I do.
The thing
I
is,
do. That's,
the
it's
thing
just gross.
Is, it's not like they do it on occasion when they say something really clever. They do it for everything. every status they write, they'll like it. It's like a trend. It's like an addiction. It's like do they statuses.
Think, do
is,
they think that it they, increases their readership or what?
I guess
what?
So. No, maybe they think that the total Kyler like Reed number is Reed an indicator of how important you are.
Never
and
happen.
If you're one number higher, that you're that much better of a person.
Does it go into like a like surplus or something?
I guess so. Maybe we should start like keeping like stats.
Are there stats
and
on
then like
that?
Tattooing the numbers.
They
in
must
your forehead?
Think so.
We should have a fantasy league of social
the
media.
The Facebook fantasy
well,
league.
The Ninth Circle is considering doing a fantasy league of sorts. The back
we're thinking about adopting
Grantland.com's right.
back quarterback league. Maybe yeah. There's some good fantasy leagues
there's some
out
potential
there,
there
that are. But.
This is
no,
not something we will be
the,
adopting, though.
No, this is not. We're not going to be doing
like
this.
League.
We will not be all liking our own stats.
The LFL?
That would be...
Honestly, that would be... If I were to, quote, hack somebody's Facebook, which is when somebody leaves their...
You would,
yeah, we know,
that?
We know.
That's not hacking. Give me a break.
Know.
That's not hacking.
It's,
would you like
the one thing
everything
I would do,
they ever said?
I would just like all their stuff from their own. That would be the worst... That would be the most embarrassing thing. It would be so much worse than just like saying, oh, I love my friends, or oh, I'm a big doofy.
Or some inappropriate
or
joke.
So make them look like a complete.
Just
complete,
destroy them.
Complete
destroy
Bobby
their
Petrino
credibility.
That's what you do.
Like a complete,
Can you post? Can you post an empty status and just like it? Because that would be the most epic one to do.
I don't know if that's possible.
What if you posted something like, I like myself, and then like it?
There we go.
And then comment.
It's very
and then
meta.
Like it.
And then comment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like the comments.
Like the
that
comments.
You put on it.
It's like Russian nesting dolls of
it's, failure. You know what the saddest thing would be? If
wow.
nobody ever responded.
Interesting
and
comparison.
It was just a conversation having with yourself.
So don't do it. For goodness sake. Don't like your own comments. Don't like your own status.
And,
don't
and,
like your own pictures.
Ever,
we know you like
said,
it. You said it. You posted it.
Nobody
for
has
goodness
ever said,
sake.
I like that guy's confidence. He liked his own status. If I'm a boss and I'm hiring you.
You're not hiring
you like
him.
Nope.
You're not hiring him.
No. That is no. a deal breaker.
No.
Ladies, if you are dating a man who likes his own status,
stop.
Deal breaker. That is done. You are done.
Yeah.
That's a full Petrino right there. That is unacceptable. Unacceptable.
And if someone's doing that, just tweet us at Cronkite
Let
Sports.
Let us know. Please direct them our way. So
we'll,
we
we'll take care of the problem. We will take care of the
on
problem.
On the Ninth Circle, we like a lot of things. We like ladies. Pro ladies.
We're pro ladies.
Pro crow.
Pro crow.
Pro ladies.
When it comes to people like Petrino.
Anti-Petrino.
The people
Anti-Petrino.
Who like their own statuses, you're not welcome. No.
Petrinos.
You're not welcome in the Ninth Circle.
You're Petrinos.
You're Petrinos.
I think that's our new category for...
Full on Petrino.
The VIPs.
We should post every time somebody likes their own status.
Petrino.
Get
Petrino.
Out of here, you Petrino. Get out of here, Petrino.
So I think that's been it's an important topic. It's a very important topic.
It is very
topic.
Important.
It is the very important topic.
You are correct.
People have been waiting for this the entire show, and I think it was worth
Finally.
A while. Because now
one of the
you're not gonna look silly
ever.
On Facebook.
We
in front
have,
of
we are teaching
thousands
we
of
are
friends.
Literally, when, people. We not, are preaching
yeah,
to you.
Most people don't do things for large audiences. Most people aren't journalists and purveyors of mass communication.
Purveyors? Connoisseurs?
Well, perhaps connoisseurs, but
you think they're
creators,
connoisseurs?
Who knows? Mm. If they listen to us, they're hopefully connoisseurs.
Ooh, yes.
I don't know, though.
Ninth Circle connoisseurs.
Most people aren't talking to tens of thousands of people every day like the three of us are, but they are Facebook posting to tens of thousands of people every day. And...
Tens of thousands.
Only you, Tyler. Tens
of thousands.
Only Tyler does.
That's like the thousands of gallons of water that you could save on every flush.
Yeah,
you know,
that
place
should be
toilets.
The next VIT. Save
All right,
that for next
save
time.
Save that. That's the next
That's
one.
That's the next VIT.
We've got math and we've got environmentalism for next week's very important topic. But for now, we're going to wrap it up. We've kept you waiting long enough.
Because we got to get out of here. We're
we
going to
get
kicked
the
out.
Heck out of here. We're
about to get locked out of the building.
They're
going to come in here and
So we're doing a new segment. We love pro sports. We know you love pro sports, but you don't come here for pro sports, you come here for us. So we're going to give you just a little bit on pro sports. This is going to be a new segment. Maybe we'll do it again, maybe not. We'll see how it goes. Trey, will you hit the music? Maestro, please. All right. This is a very new segment, hopefully ongoing. 5 questions on pro sports. All right, gentlemen, are you ready? Do you have you been prepared? Do you know what's going on?
Let's do it.
Let's do a ding in with your name to see who goes first, and I will maybe I'll give you points.
Do we just say ding?
Try it.
Say ding. Wait, I can see you. I'll know who you are. Don't say your name. That's over the phone.
I'm gonna say ding.
All right, here we go. 5 questions on pro sports from the boys in the Ninth Circle. Number 1. Is it soon enough to call any division race in baseball? And if so, which is it?
Ding.
Oh,
I gave a high pitch one. I think I went all
give
out.
It to him
I
for the high pitch.
Trey, go ahead. You go
but
first.
But I can't do a high pitch.
All right. So. I hate to pick the team with the biggest lead, but and they don't actually have the biggest lead, but they have the highest percentage of making the playoffs chances, whatever. Washington, the Nationals look outstanding this year. The pitching staff is incredible.
So you don't think shutting down Strasburg and giving it to four other sub-3 ERAs is going to be you don't think that's going to destroy them?
That's not bad. That's not,
not
a bad,
bad
rotation.
It's great.
Five sub-3 ERAs.
So you're saying it's not Steven Strasburg and a bunch of 38-year-old
veterans?
We're
not talking about last year's Detroit Tigers, y'all. This is he doesn't have the best ERA or whip. Those are both Jordan Zimmermann. Like, all of them have a whip under 1.3. So you don't think shutting down Steven Strasburg is my question?
It's not going to make 7.5 games of a difference. They will win that division almost. I almost guarantee it. I can't say I do guarantee it because of what happened last year.
Come on, say it. Go for it.
All right, I'm going it. Joe Namath time. I guarantee you the Washington Nationals will be in the postseason come October.
There you have it.
I think Washington now hates me because if anybody ever asked for a championship,
if they're listening,
if Washington is listening,
we are in the wrong studio.
Tens of thousands of people. Maybe somebody's from Washington. You never know.
The O Dog, you think the O Dog's listening after the DNC speech tonight? The old pups, as Kyler says.
O Dog and the old pups. That's Obama and the girls. That's one of my best. Alex Allen, what do you have to say on that? Who is it possible? Is it are we able to call any of the divisions?
And you can't pick Seattle.
I'm not. They actually have a higher run differential than Baltimore, who's leading the AL East. But that's for another time. I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Reds, who do actually have the highest lead of any team in any of the six divisions across Major League Baseball. They're 8.5 up on the St. Louis Cardinals. The Reds, I really like their offense. Joey Votto just got back off the disabled list. 1-9, that's a tough lineup. Votto, Ludwig, Bruce, Phillips, Frazier, just goes on and on. You got Aroldis Chapman throwing 103, 104 in the ninth inning. Try hitting that. Especially if they happen to relinquish some of this lead, they're not going to be afraid to use him in the eighth or ninth inning. And then the Reds, they got Mike Leake. They have Brunson Arroyo. Those are two guys that are 4-5. Those are solid. And then up front, Johnny Cueto's having an unreal year. Matt Latos from Trey's San Diego Padres just came over in the trade. The Reds traded the entire AAA roster for Matt Latos, but it's worked out for the Reds.
It's worked out for the Padres, too. It has.
But I guarantee Cincinnati Reds are NL Central champions.
We're going Rex Ryan all up in everyone's faces here. Very nice. Okay.
Playoffs.
Guys. Hard to disagree. It's not Rex Ryan.
I don't know. I just came up... you play to win the game.
That's
hard. wait, I can't get it right, can I? Wow.
Jim Mora was playoff. That's playoff. Rex Ryan used to guarantee Super Bowls for the
practice?
Jets 2 years in a row.
You're talking about practice.
AI?
That's Alan.
You got hometown Denny Green.
Worst impression of all time.
Denny Green.
Practice? That's Jim Mora doing Allen Iverson.
Denny Green is the best one. We had him right where we wanted. Yeah. And we let him off the hook.
I think you guys just blew out the speakers every computer of the tens of thousands of listeners out there.
More tens of thousands. Difficult to argue with that, guys. But what you're saying is that the NL West division race is not guaranteed Dodgers.
Well, you can't say that. It's only a 4.5 game lead.
He said guaranteed Dodgers.
Oh, guaranteed Dodgers. Well, if you're guaranteeing Dodgers, I have a door to show you right now.
Okay, so guaranteed from the mouth of Trey Lanthier, Washington will make the playoffs and will win the division. From the mouth of Alex Gallant, Cincinnati, well, I can't disagree, and I can't pick anyone other than that. I think all the other races are absolutely in there. Number two!
Ding, ding.
Wait, he can't ding before he's disqualified.
It was like a number two.
It was different.
Like boxing.
After a rough game at home following a Super Bowl win, something that hasn't happened this century, y'all, are the Giants, New York Giants, in trouble?
Ding!
Alex Gallant!
That was a long delay there.
I had to think about that.
Of course they're in trouble. You'd be silly to think they're not in trouble. The Eagles coming back. Yes, they're injury prone. I know Trey's going to disagree with me on this, but Giants secondary depleted. Tony Romo carved them up last night. And it wasn't to Dez Bryant or Miles Austin. It was to Kevin Ogletree. If you see Kevin Ogletree having a big game, wouldn't you think you might guard him a little bit more? Giants couldn't do that the entire game. They have a nice front four with Pierre Paul, Umanyora. Who's the guy with the mask? Justin Tuck.
Justin Tuck.
That's a nice front four, but aside from that, especially if Chase Blackburn's out for a long time, he got hurt in the final minutes. At linebacker, linebacker and safeties are two key positions in a passing league. I don't think the Giants' defense is going to hold up. And now, if you look, if you come back week 17, Cowboys are going to have one game up already on the Giants with another home game. They could take the tiebreaker potentially. And if it's a tied division at the end, Cowboys would have the edge.
Ding.
All right. It says yes.
Jump in here. It's not, for one, it's not silly to think that after one game, and I'm a Charger fan, so I have been raised on the fact that you can start 0-4
and still
and
never win a
still
Super Bowl.
Become a contender in the same season. The Giants have always been one of those teams, when you expect them to win, they fail. They are the team that loves being under the radar. And I think winning the Super Bowl last year gave them so many expectations. A lot of people are big on the Giants this year. I don't know why. I don't see what they see in them. They got hot at the right time last year. I don't think the Giants will be contenders for at least another year.
Are you agreeing with me?
In a way, but I'm not agreeing that that they should be upset or that they should be worried about their hopes for the season based on one game. It was a letdown game.
I disagree.
It was going to happen.
I disagree.
It was going to happen. The Cowboys have a ton of talent on their roster. Despite what a lot of people think, they're always a high team because of their popularity, because of the potential the Tony Romo shows sometimes. But they always show up in these early games. They always seem like they're ready to play. And then as the season goes on, they tend to collapse. Like last year, when they couldn't win out in their final game against the Giants to make the playoffs.
Okay,
so,
right now, do the Giants look like a playoff team?
No.
No. That's my...
No.
This is...
But
there's just, only 16 but, games. But you only have 16 games.
Okay.
You can't just sleepwalk through the first half of the season.
Not even 10% of the season yet.
Let's go back. In week 15 of last season, when the Giants lost 23-10 to the Redskins, do you think they looked like a playoff team then?
No, they didn't look like a playoff team when they lost to the Seahawks at home. They didn't look like
exactly
a playoff team.
They got hot
when they lost
right time.
When they lost
at the Redskins to open the year.
Four games in a row in the second half of the season. Four losses in a row in the second half of the season, and they won the Super
if
Bowl.
If they get hot again, great, but you can't rely on that
year after year. You cannot assume
you're going to get hot
here's
at the end of the
I'm
year.
Saying. Here's all I'm saying. Here's a team very similar to the team that won the Super Bowl. A team who just played a Cowboys team that got way better, was already pretty decent last year, just had a couple of secondary issues that they fixed. Tony Romo looks like he might be ready for that breakout year when people start stop bagging on him and realize this is the guy that the stats have said they are. Don't you think that the Giants could win another 9 games? They've got 15 to do it. Don't you think they could win 9 of those games? All you got to do is make the playoffs. Now, that being said, NFC East looks ridiculous.
The NFC as a whole is a lot better this year.
I don't know if 9-7 is going to do it.
You could potentially look at 3 teams out of each division have a chance at the playoffs.
If you're saying that they won't do that, what you're saying is the Giants are going to have a losing record this season? Do you think 8-8 or worse for the Giants?
I can see them going 8-8.
I can see them. See, this is the thing. I can see this team being a Super Bowl contender just as easily as I can see them being an under 500 team. I think they have so much of a ceiling, seeing we've seen them do things that are unbelievable when you think about it towards the end of a season.
True.
And they've done this twice in the past 4 years, so it's not unheard of. It's just a matter of the problem is when you put those expectations on the team to start the year, which a lot of people were putting on the Giants at the start of this year, there's no way they're ever going to live up to that. That's not how they play. They play under the radar. They play best when they're not expected to win. They lost to Seattle at home. No offense, Seahawk fan, but Seattle traveled across the country, clear across the country, Seattle, New York.
Well done.
And they lost. I know my geography. Thank you, Kyler. And they lost. You cannot lose that game. A Super Bowl contender does not lose that game. But then they turned their season around, and they became that Super Bowl contender somehow.
You just can't rely on that. Look at this back half of the schedule. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Green Bay, Washington, New Orleans, Atlanta, Baltimore, Philadelphia. There's not one cupcake game there. If you have to play the AFC...
NFC is good.
If you have to play the AFC North and the NFC South this year...
All right.
See him make the playoffs, and they make it great. I'll eat my words, but I don't see it.
Okay.
Eat his words.
All right, Alice Gallant and Trey Lanthier, just in different ways, both say Giants are in trouble. I disagree, but I respect your argument. Number 3, will there be an NHL season?
Ding.
Trey Lanthier.
I think there's not. I'm sad to say it, but you think back to the 04-05 season when this lockout came, and people thought that hockey's finally becoming a big thing. It was coming out of the 90s, it was coming to the 2000s, and it was starting to build up its popularity finally. It would have been the 88th season, but it was becoming a nationally covered sport more than ever before. And suddenly,
more than ever before, more than Gretzky, I think.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
But it was post Gretzky, post Jagr, so I don't think it was at its biggest point.
Okay, maybe not at its biggest point, but it was definitely.
It was high, though. I agree.
It was heading into the 21st century, ready to go, ready to build up and start up. And this lockout comes out of nowhere. The same way this one did in my eyes. I didn't know anything about it. Because nobody cares enough to talk about it. And suddenly the season was wiped out. The entire season. We're not talking shortened.
No, I know.
The entire season. 82 games or however many they play were wiped out from their schedule.
Yeah.
I see no indication that there's any progress being made this postseason.
I see plenty of indication.
Alex Gallant's counterpoint.
Donald Fehr, MLB. He worked with the MLB union. He's now working with the NHL Players Association. He wants to get this done. He got it done in the MLB when there was a work stoppage in the mid-90s. And I don't think the NHL would go down in flames if they went. For the second time in 8 years, they would not have a season. Yeah. You cannot do that to the fans. You cannot do that to the owners. You cannot do that to the players.
Yeah. The NBA.
I will say there will be a lockout. There's going to be a lockout.
Too big. I agree. Something
there's going to be a lockout, but it's not going to be the whole year. I'd say preseason maybe. I'd say maybe a month lockout at most, but they are not going to let this happen again. It took them 2-3 years to get the sport back to at least respectability. Yeah. I don't think they have the time to try that again.
All right. Trey says no. Alex says yes, but there will be a lockout. I'm inclined to agree with Alex.
There will be a full NHL season.
You're saying yes. No lockout.
There will be a lockout.
No game lockout. No
Correct.
Games lost.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I'm inclined to believe to agree with Alex. No offense, Trey, but appreciate the debate. Number four. All right. Now we're getting into the future as well. Biggest upset pick for week one in the NFL. Ding in, ding in.
Ding. This is a really tough one. This is a really tough one. And you know what? A lot of people have completely hopped on to the Bears bandwagon. A lot of people. Kyler, I know you have.
I'm not on the Bears bandwagon,
Chicago all summer. You
I
got
get
to
Bears
hear
bandwagon.
Everything about them. All the hype. And you believe they're going to be a contender this year, though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Exactly. I don't see this in I'm a naysayer, I know. Okay. I see last year as a team that should have come together under the fact they didn't have a quarterback and instead fell apart. And the thing that people still aren't addressing is that Jay Cutler still doesn't have much of an offensive line. He doesn't.
The Chicago offensive line is not good.
It's a problem they never addressed, and it's a problem that can be a huge concern when you're playing in a division as tough as the NFC North.
So you're
facing the Vikings defensive line. You're going to face the Packers tough defense, but I don't buy into the Bears at all this season, and I think they're so hyped right now. Everybody is on the Bears. Everybody. Everybody's like, man, they got it. Tons of ESPN guys. Love the Bears. Love them. I think they're set up. Their head's been blown up. And here's the biggest X factor. Andrew Luck. He's coming into Chicago. And if any debut was big enough to the point where if he pulls off this upset, I'm going to say it's one of the biggest debuts I've ever seen from a quarterback. No matter how he does it. I don't care if he wins the game. That's it. That's all I need to know. He's a winner. And that's his chance to prove himself. Coming off a pretty big post or a preseason in which he started to address the naysayers who have really been on the RG3 bandwagon recently, and I'm still on Luck. I think there's a reason that he was so highly touted coming out of Stanford, and there's a reason that he's the number one quarterback drafted this year. And I think he's going to be able to lead this offense. It's just a question of whether or not the defense can hold down the Bears with their wide receiver core that's suddenly a lot better. But I do like Indy to pull off the upset, and it's a risky pick.
Okay,
but
that's a good pick.
I'm looking at the schedule. That's a good pick.
That's what I was going to go with. So are we going with just line the Vegas line count as an upset? Or
who wins? Yeah. Well, it has to be, obviously, when the team
so it has to be an underdog.
Favored.
Yeah.
It does have to be.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay. Then I'm going to go with the Buccaneers at home over the Panthers.
Okay.
I like I like what Greg Schiano's doing coming in from Rutgers. Josh Freeman looked terrible last year.
Yeah.
I think he looked disinterested, but now he's got Vincent Jackson. He's got a nice, what am I looking for? Left tackle in Carl Nix. That's good protection for his blind side. Josh Freeman, I think, is going to have a bounce back year. Mike Williams, who is not a prototypical number one receiver, can now relegate to the number two role. That defense is going to be improved.
And
they had
a
couple
Panthers.
Key injuries, and I don't see why the Panthers deserve to be a favorite on the road this early. They're going to be a good team, but not week one.
And especially because their defense is so unproven. We're just assuming that this young defense they just drafted is going to be able to come in and make an impact right away when they were one of the worst defenses in the NFL last year.
Yep.
Those are good picks, guys.
How about that?
I don't even know who to pick.
We got that info from our bookies in Vegas.
Called them up.
Who's favored between Pittsburgh and Denver?
Denver by two.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Well, that'll be a game to watch.
But until I see it, I'm not betting against Peyton Manning.
Those are interesting picks. So you're betting on Freeman coming back, sophomore slump from Newton.
Then it's a home
Schiano
game.
Making a big deal.
A home game.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Although Newton shredded them last year. That was a.
Yeah, but New year.
Okay.
Buccaneers were just bad.
Well, and now you know how to
Raheem
strategize
Morris gave
against
up last
Newton.
Year.
That's true. It was
he's played
season.
A whole year. Yeah. Sophomore slumps. Always got to watch out for him.
All right.
Yes.
Good one, guys. I like that. Very good. Okay.
All right, last one.
Number five. And we're coming back to the Devils because Ninth Circle is where the Devils live, and we're going to bring it home
on number five.
Give me the score for the ASU-Illinois game on Saturday.
Ding.
Trey Lanthier.
I'm going to go with ASU coming out victorious, and I'm going to call the final score to be 24-17.
Somewhat low scoring.
Yes.
We were just
talking with Mike, and he was – Illinois' defense is solid. Illinois is going to be able to hold down ASU at least somewhat. ASU's not going to run all over anybody from the Big Ten. It's just not going to happen. Illinois is going to be able to hold them down at least somewhat. I'm hoping to see Michael Eubank and Taylor Kelly, the quarterback combo, work to its full potential. And I think that Illinois is kind of an if question mark right now. A lot of people are wondering exactly where they stand in the college football landscape and if they're even considered one of the high-tier teams or not. And I don't think they are.
No, you're right.
In the Vegas bookies themselves, as we called them up and to ask
about this,
ASU is favored in this game by 3.5 points.
Well, so, Vegas knows what they're doing.
There's a reason they're still in Las Vegas.
Also, remember, last year, and granted, ASU may have had a better team last year in terms of individual talent. Last year, ASU went out there.
Man, I don't know about
And it came down to a 3-point game. 3 points. ASU had every chance to win this, and they couldn't come away with it because of a coaching issue. Fixed the coaching issue. Now have a better team unit. Illinois is coming out here. I got to go with ASU. I love home teams on a cross-country road trip. And I think ASU's got a ton of momentum coming off that first game.
Yeah.
All right. I like that.
Okay.
24-17. Alex, what do you have to say?
I got two picks. Two scores. Watch how this is going to work. With Nathan Shieldhouse for Illinois, if he plays. And it's still a question mark if he's going to play a quarterback for the Fighting Illini. 27-20 ASU. They're still going to win. Without Nathan Shieldhouse, 34-21.
In
ASU's favor. Sun Devils are going to get the ball more. Riley O'Toole is not going to know what hit him if he's going to play as the backup for Illinois. Illinois is going to score a mercy touchdown to get one more point than they would if Shieldhouse was in there. But the margin will be greater for the Sun Devils. Either way, they're going to win. This is a vengeance game, as Trey put it earlier, and they'll be 2-0 heading to Missouri, which is going to be tough. But
it is a vengeance game.
It's going to be key to be 2-0 instead of 1-1 going to Missouri, because then you'd be looking at a losing record heading into Pac-12 play.
All right. I like those, guys. I like those. My call, 35-27 ASU.
My goodness, man. You guys got high scores here.
I think there's going to be a lot of running. This weather for Saturday, 72 degrees high. It's going to be a night game. It's going to be in the low 70s, high 60s. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be
72.
See, this is when ASU starts to become the best college to go to in the country.
How crazy is that?
When 72. Everybody else starts freezing that, around the country.
Is this a reliable website?
It's weather.com.
Is that 72? Is that 72 at game time?
I don't have that. I don't have that. I just have high. It's going to be lower. According to this, it'll be probably lower than 72. This is Phoenix, Arizona, isn't it?
Are you sure?
I don't know. That's crazy.
Phoenix, Illinois, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh!
Because I'm my handy-dandy weather app
classic
here.
Classic Kyler mistake.
Oh, 102 with a chance of thunder showers.
Classic mistake there.
All right, then I'm going to say 31-21, Sun Devils.
So we're all giving Illinois about 17 to 21 points, which will not be enough.
No, not be enough, because the tempo was so slow.
So, I mean, come on, guys. 63 points, ridiculous.
Very slow. So that's it. Five pro and ASU questions.
Are we going to play Savannah State after this game?
Or? I would hope so.
Is that,
I,
are there still going to be a Savannah State football
team? Maybe we can set the record for the highest ever. Maybe or maybe not, considering they're playing.
Hopefully that $1 million or about $850,000. Hopefully that'll be good for
the
70-point
loss. They're going to be looking at that $1 million and looking up at the 70-0 score, not 70 million zero. Good thing I don't think they're going to lose by that much.
You know, it's a good thing the players don't get any of that. I mean, that'd be ridiculous.
Imagine getting recruited by Savannah State.
That is such a scam.
Getting recruited by Savannah State.
I never even thought of that. That's a really good point.
Imagine getting recruited by Savannah State. They go, come on to our program. We're going to play some huge university. Look at our schedule. And then you show up and
you get rocked.
You get slaughtered. No,
of course you're
going to
get slaughtered. They know they're going to get slaughtered.
No, it's not slaughtering. This is sacrifice. It's exactly
or as Trey
what it
likes
is.
To say,
you are being sacrificed
time.
To the gods. You are being sacrificed to the gods of college football.
Oh, my goodness.
You are only satisfying team's need to improve its stats.
Oh, my goodness. That's upsetting. Well, Alex was right. 103 in
that
Phoenix
about
on
right.
Saturday.
Sounds
that
about
is
right.
much more reasonable. I didn't
Illinois
know there was
fans,
a Phoenix, Illinois.
Get your sunscreen out.
There's also
You're
Phoenix, Oregon.
Oh, there you have it. So, 103 degrees Saturday. It's about 100 million degrees in here. We're in the ninth circle, way down
wow.
here.
Wow. They're about to turn
my
the
ears,
lights out.
My ears are burning. My ears are burning.
Well, there you have it. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me. So good to be back. Love being back on the air with you folks. Trey is up and dancing. He's so excited. We've got so much good content. It's fall. There's fall sports, ladies and gentlemen.
And guess what? We're just getting started.
We're just getting started. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next week. Thank you so much for your time. You have been in the ninth circle.